time for the glass ceiling. Even though next Wednesday we're not going to do the glass ceiling because it'll be the second round of our playoff matches. We're going to decide who makes it into the final 16 for I Beg to Differ, which returns May 9th. So this time, 2 weeks, you're going to be hearing Nigerian students here in Lagos debate in the studio. But today, my big question on the show, and you know I always have one, well, for every segment on hard facts, to be honest, but I really, really want to know, how do we support abuse victims emotionally? How do we support abuse victims emotionally? Domestic violence has been in the news a lot lately, especially in the aftermath of the horrible death of Osinachi, the gospel singer, Osinachi Nwachukwu. We've talked about it a lot here on The Glass Ceiling, because this is the show where we shine a light on the invisible obstacles that women face, whether they are economic or political or cultural or social, or in this case, physical health and life and death. So in the aftermath of Osinachi's death, we have heard lots of things. We have had lots of conversations about the factors that lead to people staying in marriages where they're being abused. And I've been trying to move that conversation forward. That's why a few weeks ago, I made us look at how different institutions react when a woman wants to leave an abusive marriage or when a man wants to leave an abusive marriage. I have a friend who was being physically abused by his wife. And for the longest time, he endured it. And when he finally wanted to leave, his wife's mother said to him, "Why do you want to leave? Because your wife is beating you. That's how marriage is. That's how husband and wife is to behave. And then they beat you, you make up. They beat you, you beat her back." But this gentleman was, well, a gentleman. He was raised well, and he had such respect for women. But the woman he married, you know, was verbally abusing him, emotionally abusing him, psychologically abusing him, and physically abusing him. And yet, when he wanted to leave, people knew that this was happening. But when he wanted to leave the marriage, they still like told him, "What are you doing that for? Are you not a man? What kind of man are you? How can you say you want to leave because a woman?" And you see this man, gigantic, and his wife, very tiny. So people are like, "Big man like you, your small wife like this, they beat you up. Shame no, they catch you," you know? So that's what I want us to talk about today. Last week or 2 weeks ago, we talked about what the institutions do, and we saw how the different institutions, whether it's for men or for women who want to leave, it's worse for women, you know, because a lot of men don't even, first of all, admit that they're being abused by their wives, you know, not to talk of wanting to leave because of that abuse, because there's a lot of toxicity, you know, around male abuse and male vulnerability and male violence, etc., etc., you know, so that conversation doesn't even happen as often as it should happen. But even as much as it doesn't happen, what happens with women is far worse and much more. The incidents against women far outweigh the incidents against men for very obvious reasons. So today, I want us to take a slightly different angle. So like I said, we've talked about the institutions, the family, the police, the government, religious and traditional authorities. We've looked at all of those institutions. Today, let's look at the emotional factors that cause a lot of domestic abuse survivors to stay in the dangerous situation. Joining me to talk about this is an author and relationship coach. Her name is Tosin Sani. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sandra. Thank
good to have you here.
Likewise. Thank
Lagos, you can also join the conversation. Move the mic closer to yourself.
Okay.
Lagos, you can join the conversation. If you have questions for Tosin, feel free to call with those questions. You have questions about the emotional and psychological effects of physical abuse. Please feel free to give us a call on 01465-7190. That's for women. For men, 0700-993-993-993. Tosin, let's talk about domestic violence from a psychological point of view.
Mm-hmm.
What forces make an abuse victim feel like they should stay or they have no choice but to stay?
You know, this is such a deep subject. And before we even go into that, I feel like we need to even establish why this is a thing, right? Because when people talk about domestic violence and when they're trying to understand why a victim would stay, people outline issues like financial, you know, stability or the lack of it, you know, socioeconomic factors, cultural factors and all of that. And I do agree that those things are very important, but there is an aspect that people don't really focus on, and that's the fact that people who stay in abusive relationships are often really, really broken people who have what we call soul wounds, wounds from the past that are yet to heal. You know, people have unresolved trauma. And I feel like we need to also just demystify what trauma is, because, you know, most people feel like, oh, I didn't have a tragic childhood, I didn't experience death or divorce, you know, or nobody molested me. But soul wounds, they go way deeper than that, right? So divorce, death, yeah, molestation, all those things are the big things, and they definitely do lead to people carrying soul wounds and all of that. But even things that are seemingly as little, and they're not little, things like a child being bullied by their own peers, people carry on, or being called names, people carry on these pain-based identities, and they define themselves by these things. So if you were mocked a lot, you were criticized a lot, you were laughed at, you know, you were rejected, you were isolated, even by your own peers. Sometimes it's not even what happens in the home. Sometimes it's what happens elsewhere in social circles for kids, even as young as when they're 5-3 years old. Right? Those things stick, and people begin to define themselves through the lens of what they have experienced. And so they take on these pain-based identities. And what that does is that it keeps people confined. So you have a small mind, you are confined to small dreams. And the one that all of us know, you are likely to be in a cycle of unfulfilling relationships because, you know, you see yourself in a certain way already. And so you're just likely, your field of vision, you're just likely to attract people who are damaged, people who, you know, you are likely to cling to people who speak to what you already feel about yourself, who reinforce what you already feel or think about yourself. And that's why we see a lot of people who are always in cycles of toxic relationships, cycles of abusive relationships. It's because they already feel damaged. And so they're trying so desperately to prove that they're lovable.
But you know, what you're talking about here sounds to me like something that someone would, it sounds to me like a conclusion someone would reach if they had a lot of self-awareness, if there is a lot of self-introspection. We're not a very introspective people.
That's right.
We're not a very self-aware people. And I don't say that to be demeaning or disrespectful. It is what it is. There are very few people who take stock, who are introspective, who look at themselves and say, okay, let me take stock. This is what it is. This is how it is. Who are self-aware, who review their journey. This is where I was at. This is where I'm at right now. A lot of us are just going through life, just, okay, we move. We move, you know? So when you have a large number of people, and this is anecdotal at best, you have a large number of people who are not self-aware, who are not doing a lot of introspection, so they don't even realize that they're damaged or looking for someone to love them, or they just feel like, well, it is what it is. This is how it is, you know? Perhaps, you know, I mean, you do say, okay, it's not modeled for them at home. Sometimes home is great, but they socialize. But for some of them, it is modeled for them at home. You know, you grow up in a house where your father beats your mother or your mother beats your father. And you internalize that that's how marriage works. So you go out into romantic relationships and, you know, that begins to happen to you in those relationships. You're like, oh, well, I saw my mom go through it, endure it. I saw my dad go through it, endure it. So for for what do you think about factors like that? What role do like factors like that play in shaping the people who end up with their abusers?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's so broad, and it's so interesting how so many different factors can contribute to damaging a person and making a person see abuse as normal. I mean, I was talking to someone about 2 weeks ago, and he was sharing with me that someone he was dating, whom he had been extremely kind to and sweet towards, would then say to him, "I don't understand why you're like this. Why are you not beating me?"
Mm-hmm.
And I was just shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And he was dead serious. She was just thinking that, you know, being physically abused was a symbol of love.
Mm-hmm.
And it meant he was firm and he knew what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it was just so horrifying to see the depth of damage.
Mm.
You know, so for so many people, they've seen it at home. You know, it's pretty sadly prevalent in the African culture, right? With men beating their women, and people grew up like that. Even when parents are not fighting each other or beating each other, sometimes, you know, just abusive words,
mm-hmm.
verbal abuse, because that's another thing people don't talk about much, but mm-hmm. it's just as damaging.
It is. Mm-hmm.
You know, and then people just take on all of these experiences, and it just becomes a part of them, and people don't even think there's anything wrong with them. I promise you, people think they're okay. They don't.
So how do those things then morph into a situation where the victim finds themselves, male or female, finds themselves in an abusive relationship, and these factors are forcing them to stay there?
Mm-hmm.
How do they get from that point,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they've gone through all of these things, they have the soul trauma, like you
mm-hmm.
call it,
mm-hmm.
and then they're in this situation and they're like, okay, well, I'll just stay, instead of saying, you know what, I'm gonna leave?
Yeah. So there's a level of wholeness. It takes a level of wholeness as a person for you to look at a situation and say, I'm worth so much more than this. And that's what a lot of abuse victims don't have. The truth is that what they're going through, you know, the fact that they are being abused only reinforces something they already believe about themselves. Don't forget I said so, you
mm-hmm.
know. So they already think they're damaged goods.
Mm-hmm.
They already think that they are worthless.
Mm-hmm.
They already think that they're not deserving of love and kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they're being abused, it's more like, I said it. This is really who I am. They might not be saying, you know, these things out, but that's really what is going on in their minds. Like, I said it. This is who I am. This is how, you know, and so they stay because that person is just reinforcing what they already believe about themselves. And abusers also, they smell it.
Mm-hmm.
They can recognize a broken person and they will latch onto it mm-hmm. and take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they will just continue to break you down till there's nothing left of you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll begin to feel like your world revolves around them.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that even when there are systems and structures in place to help you come out, you feel like, no, this is where I'm supposed to be. Exactly. This is what makes sense. And you know, I always say that people who go through abuse, they're not dumb, because people try to, especially when this whole case happened, I read so many comments with people saying, oh, how can people just stay in abusive relationships? People can be so stupid. People can be so this and people. And I'm like, you don't even understand.
And in this woman's case, the story is that she left and church leaders went to beg her to come back. Her mother says she left. For a year, she left. And church leaders came to beg her to come back. Which is why I spent a lot of time talking about institutions and the role institutions play in fostering domestic violence. But I want to come back to something you mentioned earlier on, like the foundation of it.
Yeah.
Do you think that if foundationally, by that I mean, because I mean, you also made that comment about broken people, you know, and I'm wondering, can broken people raise people that are not broken?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you and I were to get married and we're both broken, can we raise a child that is not broken? you know? Is it gonna be, I mean, how difficult or easy would it be for you and I as broken people in a marriage to raise an unbroken child? And if we end up raising a child that is broken, mm-hmm. he or she will end up with somebody else who is broken. So it almost seems like a daunting cycle that never ends,
exactly.
you know? And then, you come back to that, to that argument about, you know, broken souls. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, is it possible for a people who are largely not introspective, mm-hmm. right, to raise a child who is so whole that they do not end up in a situation where they are being abused? Is that possible?
That's going to be so hard. Mm-hmm. It's going to be so hard. See, everyone needs to embark on that journey of introspection mm. and peaceful inquiry.
Mm.
We've got to ask ourselves questions, because trauma can be intergenerational. It is intergenerational mm. until someone wakes up and says, you know what? I'm going to break this cycle
mm.
and I'm going to begin to ask myself questions about mm. why I'm the way I am, why I think about myself the way I do,
mm.
why I have this mindset and belief systems about what love and marriage should be like.
Mm.
Until someone begins to become aware of origins
mm.
of these things
mm.
and begins to get equipped to begin to live free of these painful stories that tell us who we are and what we're worth,
mm-hmm.
that cycle is going to continually be perpetuated. And, you know, trauma is not just intergenerational. It's so permeable, if I may say it that way. You know, it's so permeable that I don't have to be connected to you by blood to be traumatized by you and to begin to also perpetuate that trauma, begin to also traumatize other people. You know, I mean, when friends are playing on a playground, they're not related by blood, right?
Mm-hmm.
But something someone says, they call you ugly and fat or stupid and worthless, or they say, or your teachers even, this mm-hmm. is another big thing.
Or your parents even.
Or your parents
there
even.
There are parents who will say exactly. of their children, you're fat.
Exactly.
You know, your teeth is too big.
Exactly.
You know, your legs are too nubbly. Your breasts are too tiny. Mm-hmm. There are moms that do that.
Yeah. So I'm even saying, I mean, you can even, it's easy to say, oh, because your mom said that, then you'll be traumatized really, really. You know, you'll be wounded.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying that even people who are not related to you can inflict deep soul wounds on
but
you.
But can they do it if it's not being done to you already at home? If at home, if the home you come from,
mm-hmm.
you already have people who continue to affirm you mm-hmm. and reaffirm you and validate you mm-hmm. and teach you to validate yourself. If you had that foundation,
mm-hmm.
would it matter what somebody outside says to you?
That's a great question. It would definitely make your journey easier.
Okay.
You know, especially if you have open communication, for instance, with your parents, and you can go home and cry. And I'm talking about just for children now. You can go home and cry and say, Mommy, this is what somebody said to me in school or whatever. And then, you know, as a parent, you're able to reaffirm that child. It works. Mm. You know, that could definitely nullify what's being said outside.
Mm.
You know, but, you know, in the generation that maybe I was raised in, and even today, you know, we still have people who don't have that kind of open communication with their parents. So even though their parents are trying their best to affirm them, you know, they're hearing something entirely
Our
different.
Our parents
outside.
Didn't affirm us.
Well, but you know, interestingly.
Some of today's parents, so people like you and I, mm-hmm. for instance, some of us are trying to affirm our children,
mm-hmm.
but our parents did not affirm us in the way that would prepare you for life, you know. They did in their own way.
That's what I was going to say.
Yes, you know, but I don't think they did it in a way that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I get what you're saying, because I, for one, wouldn't say that my parents did not affirm me. I think, actually, my parents did a fantastic job of affirming me, but I was still in an abusive relationship.
Ooh.
Yeah, for a long time. And that's why I say, look, it goes beyond just the family, the immediate family unit.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where, you know, I'm not saying my parents were perfect, mm-hmm. but if I had more open communication with them, they could mm. have helped me through certain things that I was walking through.
Mm.
You know, for instance, I got molested when I was 3 years old by a woman, not a man.
Ooh,
you know,
I'm sorry.
That really shocks people. Like, really, you know, And it's not because I wasn't in a loving family or my parents, you know, were not there. My parents, they're people lovers. They always help people. Mm-hmm. So we had so many people living with us. They were always helping one person or the other who had issues with their schooling, mm-hmm. or who didn't have money or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, so we had so many people living in our house. Mm-hmm. And because we had many people living with us, even though my parents were instilling the right values and trying to affirm us, we also had people who were probably coming from broken backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
Who were then, and I was a child, soaking up everything they were saying to me, mm-hmm. like a sponge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so even...
Just like a virus.
It's like a virus. So even when you're in a healthy environment, it takes one broken person to totally change.
To wreck it.
Exactly, to wreck it.
Legals, join the conversation. 0700-993-993-993-01465-7190. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to hear your story with abuse. I want to hear how you got into an abusive relationship, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
You know, how did you get into it? How did you get out of it? Mm-hmm. While you were there, what were you going through? What were you thinking about? Because every time we talk about this on this show, we get so many calls from so many people who are in abusive relationships, and a lot of them don't even know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't know where to go from there. Mm-hmm. So I think if they hear from you, they hear your story, it may just be the spark they need to get them out of there. You are out of there, yes?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Girl.
I'm Sandra Ezekwesili Lagos. This is Hard Facts. You're listening to The Glass Ceiling on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Don't go away. Hello, Lagos. You're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. I am Sandra Ezekwesili. That was quite the break, wasn't it? I have on the show with me today Tosin Sani. Tosin Sani is an author and relationship coach, and she has been trying to answer for me, well, how do we support abuse victims emotionally? But you know, you haven't really answered that particular question for me. So how do we do that, Tosin?
So I'm just thinking whether I should start from, you know, institutions or, you know, just people, generally people who love other people.
Because people make up those institutions.
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly. Because what we often see is, so maybe like a shelter or some institution goes, rescues a victim of domestic violence, rehabilitates, maybe, you know, if someone who is not financially empowered, for instance, you know, they go through like a skills acquisition program just to make them more financially stable, assuming that, you know, if they are more financially stable or independent, they will not have to be with such men. But what you often find is that even when people have, you know, gone through those processes and they have been empowered, so to speak, when they leave those institutions or shelters, they can walk right into another abusive relationship because a work of healing has not been done.
Mm.
So you see, skills acquisition or empowerment for financial independence will not heal a soul wound, will not correct a belief system, or will not heal the damage that leads people to go into abusive relationships in the first place.
I'm thinking now about a caller who called in 2 weeks ago, I believe, and she was telling us that she left her first husband, who was abusive towards her, and the second guy that she's married to is also physically abusive.
That's it.
So abusive that she cannot see with one eye now because of how much physical abuse she's endured, but that now she can't leave because she's worried about what people will say.
Oh yeah.
If she does leave, because people will say, well, the first one they beat you, the second one they beat you, you must be the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for someone like that, what emotional support, you know, should those around her be offering? Should we be offering? You know, what should the emotional support for a victim like that look like?
Okay. So I just want to complete my thought, you know, also on institutions, just in case anyone here who is listening might be working in some institution that supports victims of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
We must begin to factor in healing, emotional healing. We must begin to create healing programs even while we are trying to rescue people. So as you are empowering them to be financially independent, as you are giving them the skills they need, you know, to be able to stand on their own in the outside world, you also want to be in, you also want to ensure that they are healing.
What will that
from
look
the inside.
Like? How will they do that?
So the first thing is people need to go on that journey of introspection. And now this also applies to both the person who is being abused and to the people who are trying to help the abused. Everyone needs to go on that journey of introspection to begin to question themselves, to say, look, what do I believe about myself? And why do I believe these things about myself? But you see, because we live in a society where when someone is being abused or when someone is seeing themselves in a negative light, we think we're trying to encourage them. And so we begin to tell them, you know, all these positive things. We want them to make positive declarations or affirmations. You know, we are saying, no, this is not who you are. This is, and I get what we're trying to do, but that doesn't really help. What we want to do is to begin to ask, why do you feel this way? You know, if you're throwing stuff at people and saying, oh, you are great, you're wonderful, you're beautiful, and they don't really feel that way on the inside, you know, it's going to be hard for them to open up to you and tell you that I actually feel very ugly on the inside, because they also want to live up to what you're saying about them. So we need to give people room to express their deepest, darkest, rawest emotions. Otherwise, we won't help. They won't heal.
That sounds like therapy.
They will just, exactly. So they will just mask. And a lot of people do it because, you know, we're also a very religious society. And even people who are not religious, we know the importance of affirmations and saying, you know, great stuff about ourselves. And people do these things all the time. They say this great stuff about themselves, but they believe the exact opposite of themselves. I'm a person of faith, but you see, even the Holy Book says, first I believed, then I spoke. But people speak things that they don't believe. And so there is no match between who they say they are and who they really are on the inside. And so people are trying to build truth on a foundation of lies. So people must unmask. They must be real to themselves, and we must allow people go on that journey of being real to say, look,
but we're not certified to be the ones. I mean, the average Joe or mm-hmm. Jane isn't certified mm-hmm. to be the one to whom an unmasking should be performed, you yeah. know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a therapist's job.
Exactly.
That's a
mm-hmm.
counselor's job. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the counselors you have in Nigeria, mm-hmm. in my humble opinion, are not equipped to mm-hmm. do that job, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, they're either throwing Bible verses at you,
yep.
or they are, guy, if I needed Bible verses, I know
where to go.
You think I have not prayed before I came to meet
That's
you?
That's right.
You know, so a lot of the counselors and therapists, mm-hmm. even, that we have here are either not certified, or they are, you know, not well-trained, or they are ill-equipped, or they allow their own personal biases mm-hmm. get in the way of the job that they're trying to do.
That's right.
So, And there's, like you said, there's a lot of us who are masking.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of us masking, very few of us who are certified to do the job of mm-hmm. sitting and letting you unmask in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we emotionally support each other?
Yeah.
Where does that emotional support come from?
Yeah. So I absolutely agree that it's important to go to therapy. And I feel like therapy has, you know, received such a bad rap. It's almost like if you're talking to a therapist, something, you're crazy, or, you know, something terrible is wrong with you. But we need to begin to see things differently. Can we start from there? Can we start from even saying, look, everybody needs therapy, like everybody, at least once in your life.
I agree.
You need to go through, I'm telling you, everyone, before you even become
a
therapist.
You can't be Nigerian and not need therapy.
I'm telling you, if you're even interested in becoming a therapist, before you even become a therapist, you undergo therapy yourself. Otherwise, you will not even know when you start, you know, putting on some of your own trauma on the people you're counseling, right?
Mm.
So, in as much as it's important to undergo therapy, we must face reality and see that, okay, there are still certain, you know, people still feel certain types of ways about, you know, going to therapy and all that. But from where we are, there's a lot we can do even before seeing therapists or before even talking to, there's a lot we can do if we can, you know, begin to embark on that journey first of introspection. Okay. If we can begin to go back to the origins.
What are a few quick tips you can give? I hate that we're out of time, mm-hmm. but we are out of time. We've got like 30 seconds. But what are a few quick tips you can give to someone who's listening to us right mm-hmm. now and she's hearing you and he's inspired and he wants to take that journey, that introspective journey. Mm-hmm. What are a few quick pointers you can give? Just three things okay. that they can do to start to help them if they can't afford therapy.
Yeah. So the first thing I'm going to say is question your beliefs. Hmm. Or rather, before you question your beliefs, acknowledge your beliefs. Acknowledge how you feel. Acknowledge what you think about yourself. Be truthful. Leave the fluff. Leave the declarations and, you know, the affirmations. What do you really think about yourself? Mm-hmm. Ask that question. The second thing, why do I feel the way I feel? Why do I believe the things I believe? What have I seen? What have I heard? What has been said to me? What has been done to me? Hmm. Right? And then how can I begin to, you know, right whatever things are wrong in terms of my mindsets and belief systems? Do I even know what is the right way to think? Do I even know what is the truth about myself? Hmm. Right? Those three things I believe are, you know, just such a great place to start.
Tosin, thank you so much. I wish we had more time, but people love this show, so they're always advertising here. Advertise more. We'll take a break. When we come back, Balogun Abroad will take the air.